Welcome to Every Horror Movie on Netflix, the podcast where we watch, review, and discuss every horror movie on Netflix. I am Allison with a Y here, one of your plucky hosts, joined by my fellow co-hosts, the impossibly hip Allison with an I.
Hey, hey, hey.
And the offensively talented Patrick.
Hello.
Hi, everyone.
That was fun.
Anyways, we are here today to discuss the film The Silence. I picked this one because I saw it starred the Tooch himself, Stanley Tucci. We love the Tooch. And I was like, what more do you need? So The Silence opens as researchers exploring a mine unintentionally free a colony of a creature called Vesps that are vicious, blind, bat-like creatures that hunt exclusively by sound. And the Vesps rapidly spread across the U.S., starting in big cities, killing people and causing social breakdown. As the situation unfolds, the movie follows the journey of one family, Allie, a young deaf woman, played by Kiernan Shipka, her father, Hugh, played by the Tooch, her mother, Kelly, played by my queen, Miranda Otto, and her grandmother, Lynn, her brother Jude, and Hugh's best friend Glenn, played by everyone's favorite Sex in the City hottie, John Corbett. The family quickly flees to the country to search in search of a quieter and safer environment, using skills they've already learned to communicate with Allie, who is used to living without the sound. The family fights to survive both Vesps and a strange religious cult that has sprung up during the crisis. I think one thing that is unavoidable when discussing this film is to talk about how similar the premise is to
A Quiet Place.
A Quiet Place, yeah.
Very, very similar premise, for sure. Also, wasn't there, actually now I'm even, was there like a deaf or hearing impaired character
yeah,
in A Quiet
the
Place
daughter.
Too? I thought,
yes.
Wow. Wow, 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 wow.
And an asthmatic.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Lots of similarities, impossible to ignore, like Allison with a Y said.
Even just the like basic description on Netflix, I was like, I'm very intrigued by this, but also this sounds very similar to A Quiet Place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's some interesting history to dig into there as well, because A Quiet Place was 2018, this was 2019, and this movie is actually based on a book, which mm-hmm. is 2015. So then, you know, in my research process, I was like, oh, so maybe it's A Quiet Place ripped off The Silence. But A Quiet Place, the writers actually began writing it in 2016 and came up with the idea years before that when they were in college. You know, I guess it does beg the question, did they at some point read The Silence and say, hey, let's put a deaf character in A Quiet Place or something like that. You know, there is, I don't know, there's just kind of some interesting questions of the family history of these two ideas. Because it seems like A Quiet Place, like the basic seed of this concept came up long before The Silence book came out. But then certainly I'm like, okay, so maybe Quiet Place did take a few ideas from this book. It's
right.
Just hard to know, because I'm sure no one involved would ever quite cop to
yeah.
cop to it. But it's interesting.
The PR around A Quiet Place was huge. Like I had never, I had barely heard about this movie, given that they were released within a year of each other. But Quiet Place, you couldn't avoid. It was everywhere. Mm-hmm. Huge blockbuster hit, huge numbers at the box office. So that was a big difference. You know, there were some big names there, right? Emily Blunt and John Krasinski, who everybody's yep. favorite married couple, producer
yeah.
team.
Yeah.
Well, and also had the novelty factor of being Krasinski's directorial debut.
Yeah.
And frankly, I could have swore that he wrote it, too, based on all that PR. But when I was researching, I learned he did not. He just directed it.
Oh, that is actually surprising. I also thought that he had written that.
Yeah. But yeah, certainly, at the very least, I'm sure Netflix like executives were salivating when they realized that they had this on their hands a year after A Quiet Place comes out. You know, it's like, It's that classic thing where it's like, you know, it's not the same thing, but people are interested in this basic concept. And so you're probably going to get more people watching it on Netflix because people are fascinated by this other movie that has such a similar premise.
Yeah.
Do you think at any point they were like, oh shit, we've already started making this movie and now we can't back out and it's too close to the other? Like, I'm sure that they had to spin it in a positive way to keep morale and production rolling. But like, on the flip side of that, it's like, oh, people like The Quiet Place, so they're going to love this. And the flip side of that is like, fuck, this is the same.
Yeah, I imagine, because like, obviously they had to have been in production for this before A Quiet Place came out. So I imagine that there was kind of like there was this excitement like, oh, we have this great cast. We have this really interesting premise for this film. And then it's just like, well, fuck, they just released something. And now they're going to say that we're copying it.
Yeah.
Even though there's no way it could have been a copy that fast with that level of, you know, production quality and talent.
That's true. Principal Photography began in September 2017. So, yeah, it's weird just that these two extremely similar ideas came out within a year of each other. And I mean, honestly, originally I was like landing on the side of this movie ripping off A Quiet Place. But now that I'm thinking about it, I'm obsessed with this theory of The Quiet Place screenwriters reading the book The Silence and ripping off ideas from that. But also, it's possible this is all just pure coincidence, and these insanely similar concepts with insanely similar characters and plots and all this stuff just happen to evolve independently.
Sometimes that shit happens.
This reminds me of a story of my great-great-grandfather. This is a true story, and it's not related to this at all. So quick divergence, if I may.
Yes, let's do family story corner.
Threw the first curveball ever.
What? So,
yeah. He was playing pro ball in the early 1900s on the east side of the country, and at the same time on the west side of the country, someone else threw the first curveball ever. But because like news didn't travel forever that way in that time, there was infighting forever. Like there are still Whoa. People, like sports people writing think pieces on who actually they called the great debate on who invented the first curveball. So wow. I think both Wild. My great great grandfather and this other dude are both credited with it at like the Baseball Hall of Fame, but wow. Which one came first, Quiet Place or The Silence?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, real chicken or egg question of our time.
Yeah, but, exactly.
But like, I think we've all seen A Quiet Place, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, how did the execution actually like play out for you guys? Because I loved A Quiet Place for sure.
Me too.
And so this had like big shoes to fill for me, I guess.
I will say that yes. And I think because it had big shoes to fill, I had pretty low expectations for this movie, despite the talent. I was like, I feel like there's a reason why A Quiet Place is big and I haven't heard anything about this movie. And one thing I will say is I do believe that this movie very much feels like an adaptation of a book. There's just a lot about the way it moves, the way there's like a lot of like major things that happen that you move through fairly quickly feels very much like a book being compressed into a film.
Mm-hmm. And also the narration, which was one of the cringiest aspects of the film for me, where she's like literally explaining. She explains like three different times via narration that she's deaf, and it seems like just reading first person text from a book almost. I didn't think of that necessarily, but when you bring up, you know, how it feels like a book adaptation, that was definitely something that kind of checked that box for me.
I hadn't thought of what the point that you just brought up, but that makes actually sense. I was going to talk at some point about the pacing of this, but I did like the pacing of it. Think it packed a lot of punch. I think, like Patrick said, I was expecting that this movie had big shoes to fill. I also loved A Quiet Place. So I tried to approach this as like, let it be different, but similar, like let it be part of a similar subgenre, right? Like if we're going to make a subgenre out of, you know, you can't talk movies.
Yeah.
instead of competing with each other, let's make them friends, you know?
yeah.
So because of that, I think I was able to appreciate this and not mm-hmm. feel the need to compare the two the whole time.
Sorry, now I'm getting distracted because I'm like, when did Bird Box come out? Because
that's another. Oh, I was going to talk about Bird Box too. Yeah.
That's another, like, you know, yeah. Sensory, single sensory deprivation based horror, basically.
Yeah, there's certainly, because what, that came out, did that come out in 2020, the movie?
The movie 2018, but the book, which was a huge hit before that, was 2014. So
Bird Box came out in 2018. Yeah. Jesus Christ.
So Bird Box came up with the whole genre. Josh Malerman came up with the entire genre. Our own
congratulations, Josh Malerman. You did it.
Another feather in your cap, sir. Mm-hmm. I'm glad you brought up Bird Box because I could not think of that while I was watching this too.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely another similarity there. But yeah, I think, you know, one of the main things that I guess I struggled with a bit on this, and I would have struggled with it regardless if I had ever seen A Quiet Place or not, was the pace. Because Quiet Place, from what I remember, drops you into this scenario that has already been long in progress, I think, at the beginning. Like, they've been living under these circumstances, I think, for maybe a couple of years or something. Mm-hmm. At the beginning,
yeah, they were pretty well adapted at that point. Place.
Yeah. And this, it's like, we have this kind of odd premise of, I guess, scientists breaking open this cave where the vests have just been, like, self-sustaining for who knows how long. And then all of a sudden, they're just, I mean, the timeline is not clearly communicated, but it seems like within days, they've completely blanketed the U.S. And I guess I struggled, I guess, with the logic of all that. It felt rushed. And now that you, Allison, with Y, kind of mentioned the way it does have that feeling of a book being condensed into a 90-minute movie, I think that helps inform my thoughts around it being rushed even more. Because I'm like, I was definitely feeling that. I think that is probably why, honestly.
I actually think I liked that it was in 90 minutes. I think that's part of what made me walk away from this movie feeling like I liked it. Like, it didn't mm-hmm. drag out. It wasn't A Quiet Place. It didn't have, I don't think, like, that much production quality. So I think had it been a two-hour movie, I would have liked it less. Mm-hmm. Like, I really did appreciate the pacing. That was something that I was like, awesome. Let's keep moving this shit along. You know, it was kind of action-packed, so.
Yeah. There weren't really lulls. And the no pun intended, but the quiet moments, felt very intentional and there wasn't too many of them. So they had a little bit more of kind of an emotional punch. Mm-hmm. You got to take a breath, but it was very selective. And I liked that about it. To kind of veer a little bit, because Patrick, you mentioned the narration of it, that kind of brings me to performances.
Yeah.
What did y'all think about the performances in this film?
Well, I mean, I'm probably already nodding too much in the direction of my review, but I think this movie doesn't deserve its cast. It's a great cast. Like, I mean, we talked about all, like, people we love. Like, we love the Tooch. We love the Tooch's jeans commercial, which I promised last episode I was going to not be able to avoid bringing up on this episode. Go look that up if you haven't seen it before. You'll think about Stanley Tucci in a whole new way. But, I mean, incredible actors in this, and I think they all do well enough. It's just in service of something that didn't the movie itself didn't work that well overall for me, but that's not really any actor's fault, I would say.
Allison, with an eye, what were your thoughts on the performances?
Powerhouse actors. I think they acted their asses off. They did what they could with the script. I appreciate what you said, Patrick, but I also think they made this movie better, much better. Mm-hmm. The movie didn't deserve those actors, but the actors took the script and made it a better movie, right? Of course they did. I'm obsessed with Stanley Tucci the whole time. I was just wishing he was my dad. John Corbett, you know, we haven't even gotten into like some of the action yet, but John Corbett, while he was on screen, was amazing.
Yeah.
You know what it was? It was all very formulaic. The whole thing was formulaic. I called within the first 10 minutes what was going to play out in the next 80, like to the letter.
Yeah.
I was watching it with my girlfriend and she was like, how did you know that? I'm like, I watch a lot of horror and there's formulas. there's formulas to this shit. But obviously the acting was amazing. Miranda Otto, come on. Are you kidding me?
God, like, I love her. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How did they get this cast? And I'm so glad they did. I'm so glad they did. What about you? Why?
Yeah, I think for the most part, the cast is a big part of why, I mean, once again, kind of nodding maybe a little bit too much to my review, like, I walked away feeling fairly positive feelings about this film. Was a huge part of the cast. The only performance I struggled with was Kiernan Shipka's, which is weird because I really like her. But her acting style in it felt a little bit too similar to her acting style in The Chilling Tales of Sabrina. It was just a little cartoonish. And I know she is very talented, but her acting style felt a little out of place. And that's just more of a pet peeve of mine than anything else. But I don't think she did a bad job at all. It's just it felt a little out of place compared to, frankly, these incredibly talented, naturalistic actors that she was working with.
Yeah, there's plenty of good performances in here. I think, you know, where this sort of falters for me is more on a script level, certainly a visual level too. I mean, this is a goddamn ugly looking movie. It's just one of these, and I complain about this on a regular basis, but just the visual style of the past 10 years is color correct the fuck out of everything so that the whole movie is like a single color and it just looks ugly and unnatural and unpleasant for no real reason, in my opinion. But I was trying to get back around to the screenplay because the weirdest fun fact about this movie for me is that it's written by two brothers, Carrie and Shane Van Dyke, and they're Dick Van Dyke's grandsons.
Who would have thought?
Like, wild.
That's so random.
And Shane has quite the track record. He also wrote an Amon film that we reviewed in the past that I don't think fared too well on the show, Chernobyl Diaries. He also wrote Don't Worry, Darling, which another rather notorious movie of the last few years, which I still haven't seen personally. So I'm not gonna smear it, but I know it generally wasn't too beloved. And he also wrote Titanic 2 for Asylum.
Wait.
Two.
Uh-huh.
What is Titanic 2?
Sequel to Titanic, apparently.
What's left to talk about?
Yeah, I would love to know what Shane Van Dyke came up with for the story of Titanic 2, but he's got an interesting track record. Did you see Don't Worry, Darling, Allison with an Eye?
I did, and I loved it.
Did you?
Oh, I haven't seen it either.
What?
I've been wanting to check it out because it felt like a movie that really got bowled over by its own bad press.
A scandal.
Horrible press.
Oh, there were scandals. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I think I went into it knowing that, but I still fucking loved it.
Yeah.
It's just like a sexy movie. And the Allison with an Y, you will love the costumes. It's set in the 1950s. I know. The cars, the dresses, the tapestries, the textiles, the mid-century modern homes. I was like salivating over that alone. And then Florence Pugh and Harry Styles, like, are you kidding me right now? Fucking
they,
yes.
They are both very hot. So
Olivia Wilde, I happen to absolutely hate. So I could take or leave her performance, but
I don't have a great impression of her as a person at this point, but I fucking love Booksmart. Like, that was her directorial debut, and that was incredible. So
same.
On that basis alone, I want to check out Don't Worry, Darling.
That movie was, Booksmart was really good.
It's so
good. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I watched that one with my daughter, but I feel like she got sucky after Booksmart. So I liked pre, post Booksmart is the Olivia Wilde that I think is a scumbag. So just my opinion. Just my opinion. Anyways.
I'm wondering what y'all's thoughts are on the portrayal of Allie, Kiernan, Shipka's characters, deafness. Because at the beginning, they very like blatantly said that she had only become deaf a few years prior.
Right.
Which explains some things.
Like but how she like, spoke so well. Yeah.
How she spoke so clearly and what seems like very normally. But I was like, she's very, very good at lip reading. Because like half the time, the Tooch wouldn't do any sign language.
Yeah. I noticed that a few times. Because the rest of the family, I think, signs to her. But he only does half the time. And I'm like, Did the Tooch like not learn all the ASL that he was supposed to before he did this movie, or what happened here?
There was one scene where he's standing outside of her bedroom and talking to her about her day or whatever. And I remember trying to see myself as if I were someone with a hearing impairment and if I could lip read what he was saying because he was not sighted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was like, I would be terrible at this.
Well, especially because I think in that particular moment, it's dark in her room. There's like hallway light behind him, so he's backlit. So it's like, yeah, this would be rather challenging for lip reading.
Yeah.
Which I'm a terrible lip reader. I cannot read lips, so what do I know? But I also was kind of thinking about that in that exact same scene.
Yeah, I never love when they hire someone that doesn't have a disability to play someone that does. Like, that's just gross and exploitative and exclusive and icky. So that sucked.
Yeah, that crossed my mind as well. And I was like, you could have cast a deaf actor for this role. Yeah. You know, I get that they wouldn't have had the name recognition, but I think it probably would have added something.
Yeah. You know. Agreed. Yeah.
I will say the part where Allie says, I'm deaf. Like, we all know how to communicate in silence was a little bit, that was maybe one of like the cringiest moments for me where I was just like, that's a little too like after school special, you know, for me.
It's like, oh, word.
Yeah, we are a family.
I live in silence.
We are a family that knows ASL, unlike other families. Like,
we're special.
Yeah, way too spelling it out too. Just like, you would think they would have already thought about that. And like, no one needed to point that out as like an aha moment.
Yeah, there are. And that kind of brings me to like, this movie makes some odd choices about where it decides to tell in the most explicit, like boneheaded terms possible rather than showing, versus some weird moments where I guess it chooses to like just barely show instead of tell. And the balance is really weird. So we have like these very on the nose moments, like what we just talked about with her explicitly saying, we're going to be good because I'm deaf and we know how to live in silence, whatever. But then there's like a lot of things that are very unexplained. I'm not going to really say exactly what I'm talking about here because I think it's spoiler-ish, but a character, we'll say, dies and it's very off screen to the point. And I mean, I think with some good reason, but it's still not spelled out at all to a degree that afterwards I like asked Allison with a why. I was like, what happened to them? And Allison was like, this is what happened. It was just like barely nodded to, you know, and there's a few other moments like that too, where things just happen. And it's like, how the hell did we get here? Like, give me a little explanation and maybe take some of the over explanation away from some other moments. I don't know, just weird choices along those lines on the show versus tell equation.
Agreed. It's hard to talk about them without spoiling, so.
Yeah, maybe we can dig into that a little more in the spoiler. Where are we going today? The spoiler.
Batcave or?
Yeah, the spoiler Batcave. Yeah, we're going to break in there and break all the spoiler vests out.
We're going to go close the gate.
Yeah, seriously. Speaking of the spoiler Batcave, what were your thoughts on the design of the Vesps?
Mm.
These very bat-like creatures. But I appreciate that they weren't called bats because bats did not deserve to be maligned.
No, bats never deserve to be maligned.
No. I thought they were bats. I liked them. I actually liked them. You know, like they were over the top and CGI heavy. But I liked it. You know, I like when you see the monster. I like when you see it early. I like when you see it a lot. So I got all that out of this. Even though, you know, they're CGI, everything is now. So the bar is there.
Yeah, they're a little bit bat, a little bit pterodactyl, a little bit xenomorph, because every fucking alien monster since Alien has been a little bit xenomorph. They got the head shape. But I liked it. They were a unique creative hybrid of a few different fictional and non-fictional creatures that I find captivating to begin with.
I really enjoyed the creature design of them. And one of the things that I really enjoyed about the creature design was that they weren't like massive monsters. And just because so often with these creature films, the monsters are huge. Yeah.
Well, like A Quiet Place, those things are huge.
Yeah, they were huge.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So I like that these, it wasn't so much their individual sizes that were necessarily the issue. It was just the fact that there were colonies of them and massive amounts that would basically swarm.
Strength in numbers.
Yeah, they're just swarmy.
Which is terrifying to me.
Mm-hmm.
So much scarier than like a massive thing is a swarm of something to me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that was something that set this movie apart from other monster-like movies is instead of there being one big one, there were several and they were strong because there were so many of them. So I appreciated that distinction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, when they're just like swarming a car and their bloody claws are like smearing all over the windows and shit like that, that's good. That's
and you
good
have
stuff.
No
that
idea works. How many of them there are or how right. they're reproducing or rather than just being one that you have to take down, there's an infinite number, presumably.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is kind of why I, you know, wished for more of the sense of time having elapsed and this situation having progressed more. Because, again, it just did not compute in my mind that this many of these things had blanketed the entire United States in such a short period of time. And so, like, either just give me a big old flash forward to explain that, or show me the very beginnings of it where there's just a few of them kind of starting to fuck things up. Because that's scary, too. It was just there was that leap to them already having basically taken over the country where I just couldn't kind of track with that.
So my understanding was that they hadn't taken over the whole country yet.
Well, I'm exaggerating, but they had like
they had like concentrated in large cities on the East Coast,
right.
And were making their way west.
Mm-hmm.
The whole of society hadn't broken down yet. There was still electricity. There was still signal, like phone signal, stuff like that. And, like, they were getting radio transmissions for, like, the news and stuff like that. So all of society hadn't, you know, broken down yet at that point, though it certainly seemed like it was heading there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm exaggerating, obviously, when I say, like, blanketing the entire country. It was still just, it didn't compute for me the sheer amount of them that seemed to have spread out over a pretty significant portion of the country what seemed to be a very short time.
Yeah.
So, okay, I kept having this thought, and I was sharing it with my girlfriend who I was watching it with, who is a budding horror movie. She's not a budding horror movie lover. She tolerates horror movies to hang out with me.
That's nice of her, though.
Yeah. She's the one who I coined, like, this movie's, like, mild salsa, medium salsa, hot salsa. Yeah. This one was mild salsa, I would say. But the whole time, I'm like, that's not how that would happen. That's not how that would happen. Our military wouldn't respond that quickly. We would not be that organized, like, the entire fucking time, right? Because, like, we lived through a pandemic. We saw everybody fucking not know what the fuck was going on. Granted, we were not being guided by administration that had any sort of competence, but like the entire time I'm like, we are absolutely so unprepared for something like this to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. No, I agree with that very much. Where it did kind of pleasantly surprise me was it addressed some things that I found implausible at first. So like Allie is conspicuously on her iPad, like a lot in this movie. They've sized up the text a lot so you can really see it on your screen, which I found funny. And at first I'm like, okay, things are falling apart to at least some degree. How is she still able to like charge this iPad? How does she still have service? And as the movie went on, she does lose that service. And so I was like, all right, good job. That makes sense.
Yeah.
And that, but then she gets it back.
Oh, yeah.
Inexplicably.
Although, honestly, I guess I'll give it a pass on that, too. Because I bet in real life, that probably would happen. Like, things would go down, and then you might
get
a flicker. It'd probably be patchy before, like, you just lost all your, like, connections and that sort of thing.
And in fairness, when she got it back, like, they had moved locations.
That's true.
Right.
Yeah. They were using some different towers.
Yes.
Yeah.
We really need this to be technologically practical, folks.
Yeah.
Be consistent.
Yeah. I think just the quickness that they declared, you know, like a national emergency. I was like, no way would that happen. I think that I'm rapidly losing faith in like the powers that be helping us through any sort of real crisis, like quick moving, quickly evolving crisis.
With something like that, if that were to happen in real life, they would try to hide it for as long as they possibly could first.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Like nothing's happening.
Exactly. Until people were rioting in the streets, and then you have that whole, like, is the monster worse than your fellow human, which is accurate, you know? But
And I'm not always a stickler for, I guess, realism in movies. It kind of depends on the tone and the genre of the thing. But something like this, where this plague of Vesps kind of stands in for any other, you know, number of real life disasters, whether it's COVID or something else. And part of what makes a movie like this interesting is seeing how it does portray what happens to society and how people respond. And so this is the kind of movie where if it's not nailing those points in a way that feels realistic to me, it loses me. And it succeeded on some fronts, like I was talking about with her iPad signal or whatever, more than others. But overall, I was doing the same thing you were, Allison, with an eye internally in my head. I just kept feeling like, I don't know about that.
Yeah.
And it seems like this would play out a little differently.
Yeah, they would totally try to hide it for as long as possible, even though we were panicking among ourselves and like had a grip on what was going on, but making all kinds of assumptions.
Yeah.
One thing that I do think would happen in real life is the man versus man element here of some of these like religious, you mentioned it in the synopsis, Allison with the Y, but some of these religious freaks that pop up that I think will inherently, even when there is going to be some catastrophe like this, I'm not
it's
saying
inevitable.
The Vesps are coming, but.
Right. But the religious cults are.
Yes. They are here already.
They are here.
They're voting.
Oh, God. Yeah, that was definitely a thought that occurred to me while watching it. I was like, okay, obviously the Vesps don't feel real to me, but this, because Allie at one point, she's like seeing all of these articles about how religious cults and like extremism was rising during the emergency. And I was just sitting there being like, oh, that's too fucking real.
Yeah. The real horrors of it all.
That was something that felt, I mean, I guess I could certainly see that happening in such a situation. I think it was another thing where it felt rushed to me because it comes, I don't know, maybe 2/3 of the way into the movie. And all of a sudden there's this scene where it's just her looking at all these pictures and articles about like crucifixions and weird cults and whatever as like one of the main side effects of what has happened. And I think it might have worked better if I had a little more sense of what else was going on in the world as a result of this besides religious cults popping up. And it was like, okay, clearly we're setting up something that's going to go on with a religious group at the end of this movie. And they had to shoehorn it in an efficient fashion. And it felt awkward to me. So I struggled with that element of this quite a bit. Especially because, yeah, I don't know. That's the main antagonist of the final act of this is really this religious cult more so than the Vesps. And I guess if you're making a movie about like religious dogma or overreach or something, then fine. But give me more of that prior to the third act. It just felt like a really like sort of sudden pivot towards that. I wasn't invested in it at all. I was invested in the family actually to a decent degree because again, like we've talked about, we have, you know, strong set of actors playing maybe not the best written characters in the world, but I wouldn't have minded at all if we just focused more on their continued kind of struggle against the Vesps instead of all of a sudden bringing in this cult.
I wonder how much of the cult shows up and the religious elements show up because I tend to agree with you, Patrick, that it didn't feel totally fleshed out. I wonder how much of it showed up in the book versus the movie.
That's what I was wondering, if there's like a lot more detail in the book.
There had to have been because for people that read the book and then saw the adaptation of the movie, I wonder if, like you said, they shoehorned this religious cult in kind of like weirdly and clunky in a clunky way, but maybe it was to at least appease or to help with the people that had read the book that needed to see that, you know, portrayed.
Yeah.
The silence doesn't, the book doesn't have terrible reviews online. It has 3.8 stars on Goodreads, 4.2 stars on Amazon. So
that's not bad at all.
Maybe some of our Amon Discorders can help us out on this one. Has anyone read The Silence, and what did you think? Let us know. There's a link to our Discord in the show notes, as usual.
How many pages is it? Do you have that handy?
400 pages.
Oh.
Not many. That's enough to get some religious stuff in there, but that's not a ton.
It's no The Stand.
It's definitely not The Stand, that's for sure.
Well, I feel like we have discussed as much as we can before getting into too many spoilers. So let's see if we would view it, cue it, or screw it. Allison with an I, what is your rating and why?
I am going to give this a view it.
Whoa.
I know. Listen, hear me out. So I when the movie was finished, I finished the movie. I looked at my friend and I was like, I really liked that. And I really, really did. I think that, like we talked about early on in our discussion today, like, I like the Quiet Place trope. I like that subgenre of you can't make any noise. I think I would be completely screwed in a world where you cannot make noise. I would spontaneously combust because I love talking. But, you know, I liked – once I was able to look at this movie as a friend and not a competitor, I really liked it. I thought the acting was amazing. I love Stanley Tucci. I was like, I haven't seen him in anything since, like, The Devil Wears Prada. Like, I am fucking thrilled to see him. I did tell another horror movie friend who had seen this movie and was just ripping on it that I was going to give it a view it. And he was like, are you fucking kidding me? And I said, listen, I said what I said. So I stand by my view it. I think it's worth a watch. I think it's a mild salsa movie for people that can't do too much horror. And I don't know. I would recommend it. I liked it. Patrick, what'd you think?
I loved your description of thinking of it as a friend and not a competitor.
I like
the idea of thinking of a movie as a friend. I want to go back to that. I think that needs to become a meme along with the mild salsa scale. That said, I will not treat this movie as a friend. I'm going to give it a screw it, but it's another one of those that I'm like, it's not – like the term screw it is so – it feels so aggressive. We came up with that – term for the scale because it rhymed, obviously. I don't really bear any malice towards
this movie.
You're
not damning it to hell.
I'm not screw it, fuck it, damn it, as Chris said one time. But it didn't do a lot for me. You know, the cast, as we've discussed, saves it to whatever degree it could be saved for me. But it just, yeah, it felt rushed, messy, and just not something that I could really recommend anybody even pop in their queue. So I got to go with screw it on this one. How about you, Allison, with a Y?
Well, I am right in the middle. I am a solid queue it.
Love it. Even distribution.
I enjoyed it. It's not something I'm like, you have to watch this, but I think it's a great choice. If you want to put on like a fairly fast-paced horror movie that's not going to take too much time out of your life, I think it's a really solid option. I really liked the premise of it. I love a good kind of like apocalyptic creature film. I find that stuff fascinating. You know, I'm a big like zombie fan. And, you know, I think stuff like this brings in a lot of the elements of zombie films that I like too, that sort of post society world that they have to adjust to. I find that really interesting. And I think more than anything, it's a cue it for me because it makes me kind of want to read the book.
Yeah.
Like I'm very intrigued by the book. It's making me want to cue the book, you know? So, and to me like that, you know, it can't be a screw it if now I'm like, I kind of want to read the book because I'm interested into digging into more of the detail of it and seeing how the book fleshed things out a little bit more clearly than maybe the film did.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Maybe y'all can catch us up on that on a future horror catch up.
Yeah. I'm going to see if it's on Libby.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yep.
All right, well, we are going to go down to the spoiler bat cave in a minute. But before that, just a reminder that you can find us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, Blue Sky at AmonCast, or you can find us on TikTok at AmonPodcast. And we also have a Discord server where there is some really lovely discussions, really fun discussions with the fans. You can join it in the link in the description of the episode. Also, please rate and review Every Horror Movie on Netflix on your podcast provider of choice. If you rate it 1 star, we will send Vesps after you. Mm-hmm. So,
and Vesps don't even exist. We're going to cook them up in a lab. That's how invested we are in fucking you up if you rate us 1 star. It may take years, but we'll get you.
Anyways, we're going to head down to the spoiler bat cave and we'll be back with some spoilers. All right, we are down in the spoiler bat cave, ready to talk about some of the more, I don't know, gory details of this film in some cases.
Who dies?
Yeah, who lives, who dies, who tells your story. Yeah.
There wasn't a ton of gore, and that's part of what made me think mild salsa for this.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, like, you know, clearly the people's deaths were brutal, but you didn't see too much.
Well, yeah, and that brings me back to, I think, is it the first? No, I guess the second kind of significant death in this is the dog. There's a beautiful, was it a Rottweiler?
It was a Rottweiler.
Yeah.
And that dog is unfortunately shot early on because the dog's going to fucking bark. And, like, what are you going to do? The dog's just going to sell everybody out because you can't tell a dog to stop barking. So they have to shoot the dog. But you...
He was not shot, Patrick, because that would have made too much noise. He broke his neck.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He broke his neck. But see, and that, but I had to have Allison explain that to me because it was, how did they even explain that?
It was just.
Because it breezed right over my head.
Tooch basically, like, he just walks up to Allie, who is clearly, like, very upset, you know, really sad looking.
Yeah.
And just, like, he was like, it had to be done. You know, I know you're upset with me, but it had to be done.
Yeah, so the dog was barking. They were all in the car. They had just started to realize that the Vesps were attracted to noise. Well, I guess they knew that from the news report, which was part of the one of the things that I was like, we would not be this organized. That message would not get spread that fast without, like, social media. But anyhow, they were in the car. The dog was barking. And it was very clear to me because I said, like, early that this movie was very formulaic. I was like, the dog's going to die. I said it before they were even in – a position where the dog needed to die. Their Vesps weren't even there yet. I was like, fucking dog's going to die. For those of you who are squeamish, doesthedogdie.com. Yes, the dog dies.
But luckily you don't see it.
He has to kind of reach over and it looks like he's giving the dog a hug and it's implied that he breaks his neck and he doesn't want to have to do it, but it was the right call.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's right. Because when he apologized to her for that, I thought, because they end up lighting the car on fire that John Corbett's character was in, which we kind of breezed over that, but he dies. And I thought that he was apologizing to her basically for, like, blowing up this guy who almost had, like, an uncle role to her. You know, I thought he was apologizing for that, and it didn't register with me until a few minutes later where I was like, where's the dog?
It was so sad. Like, I get it.
That's interesting. Yeah. For 1 second, even though I knew within a second or two that he was apologizing for the dog, I did have that same thought. Yeah. Like, I'm sorry that I had to blow up the car with your more or less uncle that was in it. But let's talk about John Corbett's death because he was, like, by far the most well prepared for a situation like this. He was the guy with the guns. He clearly had some survivalist skills. Mm. He'd been, like, doing some prepping. He was maybe military trained. And then he's dead pretty quick. I mean, like, really early into the second act, I would say.
Yeah, and what leads to his demise isn't initially the Vesps. He's driving in a van ahead of the main family, and a herd of deer runs out in front of the cars, and he ends up just careening off the road, and his car, like, rolls down, you know, a pretty large embankment.
And his leg, I think it is, gets irreparably injured.
Crushed.
Yeah.
And then Vesps start to show up, and he basically realizes that in order to get the Vesps away from the family, he needs to make some noise, which means – and he basically figured he was a goner by that point anyways. Mm-hmm.
Which I have so many thoughts about this, and the folks over at r/horror on Reddit agreed with me. It was like, fucking first of all, they barely tried to get him out of that car.
Barely.
The Tooch like tries to crowbar it open or something for like 2.5 seconds.
He like
literally
sadly
the whole scene, the whole scene between them finding him, which turned out to be gravely wounded, and them just giving up was like 15 seconds. It was like, that's how much his life was worth. And I get, we don't have a lot of time, but everyone on Reddit was like, you could have literally tried with two people. You could have tried going in a different door. Like, and that, so that bugged me a little bit. But I, when I said earlier that I predicted the whole formula to my friend before any of the action started, I was like, Glenn's going to die in a heroic way and the dog's going to die.
Yeah.
And then those two things happened like 10 seconds apart.
Yeah, literally.
And then we have the grandma who Allison with a Y called as having cancer.
I thought she had cancer. I mean, she was not well. She was hiding some illness from the kids and the family. So I was like, she's going to self-sacrifice herself because she knows she doesn't have anything else to live for. And she does. And she saves. Well, that's when the cult shows up.
Yeah.
Actually. Right. So we should probably talk about the cult.
Yeah. I feel like I already said what I had to say about the cult, which does not at all mean that we've said everything there is to say. I'm just like, eh.
So basically the cult scouts, the Reverend scouts Allie and Tooch while they're on a mission to basically get antibiotics for Miranda Otto's character who got her leg hurt. Her leg was swarmed by wasps. She survived, but it was fucked up and she needed antibiotics. Anyway, so they go into town and they're scouted by the Reverend. The Reverend tries to recruit them. They say, no, thank you. Yeah, and then basically later the cult shows up and they want to take Allie because according to them, she is fertile, which is fucked.
and also, how would they know?
Well, because she's a teenage girl.
They just meant she was young. Okay.
She's of like reproducing age. One thing that did bother me, and I think had Glenn's character not been killed off so early, I was screaming at my TV. Like, first of all, when they first see this cult leader in town, I'm like, fuck that guy. He needs to go immediately. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, no mercy. No mercy. You have a family to protect. Then when he shows up again at their house in the middle of the night and he's got his followers with him, I was screaming at my TV. If Glenn was still alive, he would have shot him. He'd be dead on sight.
Yeah. Mm.
And I'm also screaming at my TV, a cult can't survive without their cult leader. Kill that motherfucker. Put two in his head. He's done. Problem fucking solved. Now all you have to deal with is the vest. I was like, and I looked at my friend. I was like, Alex, no one ever listens to me.
You just said the cult cannot survive without its cult leader. Do you also watch The Knitting Cult Lady?
Oh, of course. But I've also gone on so many deep dives since like Trump's first presidency took my entire mom's side of the family into its clutches about how cults work. And I've gone like deep dives. So, I mean, you don't even have to go on a deep dive to know it can't survive without a leader. But
yeah, anyways, somebody should have just shot the cult leader, the Reverend.
Immediately.
Yeah.
Immediately.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that like also goes back to what I was saying earlier about how kind of uncompelling this whole cult plot line was for me, because it's like we have this unstoppable force of nature that is legit scary that they've been dealing with for most of the movie. And now we have like, you know what, five guys, you know, and I mean, they're not all men, but it's funny to me to describe the cult as five guys because it's just like five normal ass people. It's like you do actually have weapons. And I mean, I'm not, you know, I'm not like a violent person, but also it's just these fuckers are trying to insert themselves aggressively into your life. And this could be resolved very quickly. It wasn't compelling to me.
Yeah, I get that. You know, one thing that I will say about this film, particularly touching on the cult and how brief it felt like they were part of it, is that there's something about this film that also kind of feels like three different seasons of The Walking Dead sort of smashed together. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. No, you hitting on the head. Or three separate movies in a franchise. You know, it's like you could have the movie about how this happens and starts, A Quiet Place Day One. You could have the movie that's more about, I guess, their everyday survival once it sets in. And you could have a movie that's just all about the rise of cults and how that comes into play around all this. And it's just, I don't know, I just keep coming back to there's more and more evidence as we go on for this just being really rushed. It just feels really rushed.
Yeah, the cult thing, they could have done without it, but I do really think it had to have been a nod to something that happened in the book.
Yeah.
That they didn't have time to flesh out. But I'm also a non-violent person when it comes to living life in normalcy. But let me tell you what, the minute the apocalypse happens and there's any sort of religious fucking zealots out there, they're getting fucking shot by me.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
It's zero mercy. I have no time to try to litigate with you or to try to empathize with you. If you are in a cult and a religious cult, you are dead to me. Let it be known.
I love that energy.
Yeah.
That is a threat to everyone listening.
Yeah. Don't come for me. We're still living in normal times. All right, everybody. So just fucking cool out.
I feel like the listenership is fairly biased against those being prone to being in religious cults, but yeah. Just in case.
Just in case. And if not, then join me. We'll all join forces together and beat the religious cults.
Hell yeah.
So I have to say something else that was a moment of hilarity for me. It was also brilliant. When Stanley Tucci turns on the wood chipper.
Oh my God. That was a great moment.
Loved it.
It was everything. Yes. I was like, fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
Fucking brilliant use of rural farm equipment. I was so disappointed when it got clogged up with too many vesps. But I was like, you could take the whole fucking thing down just like this. You just need like 5 wood chippers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because they're attracted to loud noises. And yeah, it was great.
Wood chippers are fucking loud.
Awesome. Loved it.
And blind. And they're stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a great moment.
Highlight of the movie for sure.
Yeah, but we said before how the grandma dies. The cult gets in. They kidnap Allie, and you know the family is trying to get her back, and basically this kind of fight ensues between the cult and the family, and the grandma self-sacrifices because she ends up entangled with some of the cult members.
I don't remember this at all, to be
and
honest.
And I think she starts screaming.
She makes some noise somehow.
She makes some noise when she's actively fighting with multiple cult members. She makes noise to draw the Vesps to them. And
the Vesps attack them. Stanley Tucci gets stabbed with a big knife.
He gets stabbed in the side. Well, he ends up being okay.
How did the cult leader die? I can't remember.
Oh, Tucci gets him. Tucci stabs him. Like, in his chest multiple times with...
Because the final showdown is they send the cult sends like their mute little girl because they're cutting tongues of people. They send the mute little girl in as like a decoy, and then it turns out that they've gotten like multiple cell phones into the house somehow, which was I was not shown or told how that happened exactly, and it didn't make a damn bit of sense.
It was implied that somebody had gotten in the house though, because the Tucci heard walking around,
and there
the
was
house.
A window open in her room.
Yeah, I don't know. That was a disorienting scene for me, but maybe I just wasn't paying enough attention.
It was very fast paced. There was a lot that happened in a short amount of time.
Yeah,
they set off all the cell phone alarms to go off at once, almost like a suicide belt on this little girl. Which was
horrifying.
Dark. Yeah, and the cutting out of the tongues, I thought that was a nice touch, you know, for slimy, creepy things that a cult maybe would do to as a means to an end so that no one could talk.
Definitely.
Very much reminded me of Bird Box in that scene, in that whole sentiment, I guess. But I think the son, so Stanley Tucci gives their younger son like a sharpened stick at one point. And I think the son helps kill the cult leader with Stanley Tucci now that I'm thinking about it.
Yeah.
Or something. The son has some cool kill that I'm like, fuck yeah, little guy, way to go, whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know. This showdown, I mean, I don't know. Maybe I was just checked out by this point in the movie, but I also felt like it was very chaotically edited and just like difficult to follow. I may have almost voluntarily checked out, but I also feel like the movie had just kind of lost me at that point.
Yeah. Yeah, there were some plot holes there. I think, like, at one point we see we're made aware of the fact that these Vesps are laying eggs, and they're laying eggs in anything that's got warmth in it. So a dead body, a dead animal, which I thought was going to be a lot more. There was going to be a lot more substance there.
Yeah, you know?
Like they were going to have to deal with the newly hatched Vesps after they had just exhausted themselves trying to kill a bunch. I thought there was going to be another arc there, and there wasn't. Which was weird.
Yeah, I wonder if, like, the book gets more into that. It almost felt like, oh, this is, like, a nod to the book, where maybe there was more action around the nests.
Well, it leads into the conclusion of this, which is that they decide to go further north because they realize the Vesps do well in warm conditions, and that further northern communities are not doing well, so they go into colder territory at the end to presumably survive better. And, yeah, it feels like another example of something that's just kind of shoehorned in and dealt with in kind of a cursory fashion. Is this, you know, was this intended as the setup for the sequel that's, you know, shoehorning movies 4, 5, and 6 or seasons 4, 5, and 6 of this into a single movie? Unclear, but that's where we wind up at the end in the cold, safer from the Vesps. And Ellie gets reunited with her little boyfriend who we have not talked about at all so far, but
not important.
Yeah. I mean, it was a cute relationship, though.
Yeah.
I
thought he was cute. He learned sign for her. Yeah.
And you,
he was a little sweetheart.
Yeah, you were pretty convinced at one point that he was dunzo.
Yeah.
When they were communicating and the communication cut off, so.
Yeah. So good for them. Young love.
Good for them. She's fertile after all.
Yeah, so. they'll repopulate.
Yeah, exactly. I think one thing that bothers me about movies like this, particularly the endings, is when there's no, like, long-term resolution. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, A Quiet Place, they figured out what the Achilles heel of these monsters were, and it was this high-pitched sound frequencies. I'm thinking about, like, in World War Z, right? At the end, Brad Pitt figures out that if you inject yourself with a drug that makes you appear as though you're dying or you're sick, then the zombies don't want you. But this movie was, like, the big fix was just to go north.
Just go north.
But presumably the Vesps are going to continue to overpopulate the warmer climate. So, like, there wasn't a second movie. There wasn't a sequel to this. So it just left me feeling like, I don't know. I like a satisfying ending scientifically that I can, like, wrap my head around and tuck it in and put it on a shelf, you know?
Felt kind of unfinished for you?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, I felt the same way.
No, I think we need to have a moment of silence for the silence. Because that plays well on a podcast.
Okay.
I can't do it.
Anyways, that was the 2019 The Silence.
What's coming up next for us?
Next week, we've got Horror Catch Up, where it's our nice long-form dive into the different horror things that we've been watching, reading, listening to, all that good stuff. So tune in for that. But until then, you can catch us on social media, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, Blue Sky, Amoncast. EHMONCAST. And then you can check us on TikTok at Amon Podcast, as well as you can go to our Discord for some fun discussions and rate and review us on your podcast platform of choice. For every horror movie on Netflix, I've been Allison with a Y.
I'm Patrick.
And I'm Allison with an I.
See you next time.